53102 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@todayfm.com. Now, if you're at the Ireland-America game last week, or if you watched on the telly, you would have noticed that the members of the Irish team were wearing white ribbons. Today is International White Ribbon Day, and to tell us about it is Tom Maher. Morning again, Tom.
Morning, Ray.
Now, Tom was with us back in May, and he spoke movingly about the death of his wife, Jill. And it's a story that we all know. And Tom has turned his grief into something positive, because you're going to be working for the next year at least on the White Ribbon campaign.
That's right. Yeah. So
and just remind people, because this it's pretty old, isn't it? But it's new to us in Ireland.
The White Ribbon thing, it's quite new here. So the White Ribbon started out in Canada in the late 80s. There was an incident there. There was an incident out there where. There was a massacre in a university where a young man went in and shot dead 14 women and started, you know, talking about the evils of feminism and the and also that his girlfriend had dumped him and these kind of things. So the men of Canada kind of got together and said, you know, we have to put a stop to this. And they started the White Ribbon Campaign, which is now a global campaign in over 60 countries. So in Ireland now, it's only begun a few years now. So it's really kind of taken off this year. So we're hoping to kind of harness that energy and really send out the bat signal to all the communities across the country.
And the crux of it is so simple, but it's a wonder we hadn't thought about it before, because in a lot of the conversations you hear about violence against women, the perpetrators are left out of it.
So
it's women talking about it, and your campaign and the White Ribbon Campaign internationally is to try and encourage men. To discourage other men, even to talk casually in a sort of about women in a sort of a negative way.
Yeah. So we kind of go across the whole spectrum of violence against women and also gender inequalities, and we try to talk about those things to young people and people in the community. So I think you know, these things, as you say, historically have been talked about by women a lot, and these things were, I mean, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be able to do the work we're doing at the moment. But I think it's time, and women who've been in this work have been asking men for a long time to step up, and we've kind of, you know,
when you say step up, the thing that I wrote down when I was reading, because I read your thing again that you wrote, that was a blog, The Danger of the Monster Myth.
Right.
It's sort of encouraging zero tolerance. Because
right.
It's what struck you about the man who raped and murdered Jill was that he was, you were hoping that he was going to be a monster, but when you heard him string a sentence together, you realised that he's, you know, he was quite normal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose, what I'm encouraging really is that we recognise that a lot of this stuff remains very silent and very.
Give us an example so people will understand. You know.
Okay, well, I mean, often men who abuse, let's say domestically abuse, they will they'll present themselves, obviously, to their friends and family as, you know, very nice guys and very likable guys, and often they are genuinely very very likable guys. The point is that, you know, behind closed doors, they can be awful. And
yes.
I think by sort of breaking that silence and allowing ourselves to talk about these things and allowing ourselves to discuss how these things are unacceptable in society, and by not enabling sort of the discourse that allows people to demean or dehumanize women, we kind of marginalize those people who think they can act with impunity, I suppose.
Yes. That's a scary statistic, that one person in five knows of someone who commits domestic violence in their circle of friends and family.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, if you consider the statistics around domestic violence, that would be sort of a conclusion you'd have to come to. I mean, the fact that, you know, globally over one billion women have suffered violence of some sort at the hands of men, you know, we probably know someone who's a perpetrator. We probably don't know that we know them, but, you know, we probably know a perpetrator, we probably know a victim. But this stuff is kept in so much silence that it's very difficult to kind of tease that out.
So even just a simple thing like interjecting when a mate of yours makes a comment and you go, sorry, that's not on.
Yeah.
That will help.
Yes, of course. I mean, like, I think it carries through, you know, how we discuss things in society and, you know, what we're willing to accept. And I think I think it's I think if we walk by these things and we don't stand up and say something, sometimes it can lead to a society where we accept too many negative things.
Yeah. So the guy who doesn't get pulled up in the pub, then it leads to bigger and bigger things, and he feels that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if no one gets pulled up, then you know, other people will think it might be that this is acceptable behaviour, and you know, particularly that's particularly dangerous when that other somebody is a man who abuses.
Yeah. Now you were back in Australia. You're just home last night, was it, or yesterday?
I'm just home last night.
So that was emotional. That was the first time back since you'd left. If you know what I mean.
It was. So it was emotional. It was very. It was very strange. It was kind of a double-edged sword, where you know, you saw all these people again, who you know, your friends and family, who you love very much. But it's also that kind of darkness, I suppose, where this is the city where your wife was murdered.
Because when you were in with us in May, or maybe you didn't say then, or I heard you in another interview, you said that Melbourne became a very cold, empty place for you after Jill's death.
Certainly, it kind of became the face of the city changed for me. I think, like, from being this really fun, vivacious city to kind of a dark, sinister kind of city, I suppose.
And you were a guest of honour at the International Rules game.
Yes,
And that we were trying to get a recording of that. You got everybody there, all 40,000 people, to recite the White Ribbon Oath.
Yes, yeah.
Which is,
I swear never to commit, excuse, or remain silent about violence against women. So, you know, that's a very powerful kind of thing to have, you know, two sporting codes from two different countries to kind of, you know, make that pledge all at one time. So it was an emotional moment, and it was also a great honour to be kind of asked into that space, and especially it's such a traditionally masculine space, to kind of say those things.
It was
incredible.
Although you're in Australia, you must have been sort of touched by the coincidence of last week. There was the Irish footballers wearing the white ribbons, and yet Ched Evans was back in the news. The footballer who had raped a girl, been found guilty, was back out. There were talk about going back to his club, Sheffield, and then your man wrote that. What was his name? The solicitor. Did you read that piece?
I did.
Where is his name? There, I have it there somewhere. I'll say again.
Stuart Gilhooly.
What were your thoughts on all that?
I mean, again, it's kind of. I think it's kind of how we. How we separate the idea of the friendly abuser and the monster. Again, it's a similar thing. People who rush to defend people like Ched Evans might be the first people to condemn and violently condemn people like Adrian Bailey. And I suppose the root cause of these problems is couched in the same terms. They're like, you know, Bailey might be a whole lot more violent, but you know, if we say one's just a bit of horseplay and one's a violent rape, then we kind of discount the pain of the abuser and the psychological trauma of the abuser and the bodily integrity of the abuser, or sorry, of the
abused,
victim.
It was Stuart, sorry, I have it here now. The Professional Football Association of Ireland solicitor Stuart Gilhooly, he published an article which has since been taken down. He says, there's little point in trying to dissect the legal niceties of this very complex issue, but suffice to say that Ched Evans has a very arguable case that he's the victim of a miscarriage of justice. If having sex with a drunk woman is rape, then thousands of men are guilty of rape every day. The simple point is that degrees of intoxication are a very difficult concept for young men to grapple with when they themselves have had plenty to drink.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that's encouraging. For me, that's encouraging a culture of impunity that has existed for centuries, really. I mean, like, with that kind of attitude, I suppose, where do you draw the line? Do you say that, you know, if someone is deliberately spiked, if somebody is, you know, if we're talking about degrees of rape, we are, we're discounting the pain of the victim.
Yeah.
And I think it's grossly irresponsible to suggest that we can draw a difference between a good rape and a bad rape, or
all rape is bad.
All rape is rape. That's it.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it, the way people try and rationalize things, you know? And then, like, America must be in tatters with the Bill Cosby, the unfolding Bill Cosby story.
Yes, yeah.
When you hear people that, you know, people held him in with such affection and high esteem and all of that sort of thing, and now it's all crumbling.
Yeah.
It's an abuse of power always. It seems to be an abuse of power, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think it has a lot to do with kind of structures of dominance and stuff. I mean, there is, I mean, the Bill Cosby thing, again, he was held, as you say, he was held in such esteem, and he benefited from impunity for years because of his social standing. And that kind of social standing, I mean, you can look at someone like Jimmy Savile, all these people who are kind of in these positions of power, can often abuse that power. And I suppose it's how we use our power. It's how we use our, I mean, and the systems of domination that are in place are quite, can be quite dangerous. And particularly if we're telling, for teaching young men that dominance is a desirable thing and something that we should aim for, as opposed to humanity and care.
Do you sense there's going to be real change? Like, you're coming at it from a very unique point of view, and it's amazing that you're turning your grief into something that's really positive. And I know you're going to be talking to secondary schools all over the country, and you've done that already.
Yes.
What's the reaction? What's the reaction of teenage boys to you?
Well, there's a lot of I would say at first it's kind of uncomfortable. There's uncomfortable body language.
What do you mean,
crossing their arms, kind of putting their heads in their chest, that kind of thing. But there's also, I suppose the idea is to kind of teach young men that it's okay to, you know, to feel vulnerable sometimes, because, you know, it's inescapable. And I suppose the way, a good way of doing that is to make yourself vulnerable, and to open yourself up to kind of to those vulnerabilities, which is a very difficult thing to do, because I'm socialized as a man myself, you know. So but I think that's, you know, that's a key element to kind of lead by example, almost, you know.
Yeah. And what sort of questions do they ask you? I'm sure there's a questions and answers at the end of it, is there?
Yeah, I mean, there's yes, of course. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of stuff about there's a lot of defensiveness around certain items, like as if I'm claiming that all men are abusers or rapists, or,
yes.
Which is of course not the case. Obviously most men are not abusers and not rapists. I suppose it's not good enough to say that most men are, if we're staying silent about the men who are.
Yes. You say, you know, in this, the monster myth allows us to see public infractions on women's sovereignty as minor because the man committing the infraction is not a monster like Bailey. We see instances of this occur in bars when men become furious and verbally abusive to or about women who decline their attention. We see it on the street as groups of men shout comments, grab, grope and intimidate women with friends, either ignoring or getting involved in the activity. We see it in male peer groups where rape jokes are and disrespectful attitudes towards women go uncontested. So I'm sure in all of those situations, people have found themselves in those situations, have felt uncomfortable.
Yes, yes.
But haven't said anything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What you're encouraging through not just today, but every day, is that if you feel uncomfortable about something that one of your mates say, well, let them know.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, male policing almost, and kind of how our attitudes towards each other and how we behave. And I think it's kind of, it's something that, you know, we need to stand up and address, because all of those things are kind of little violences that happen on an everyday basis. And I think it's, you know, if we're not dealing with those, and if we allow one type of violence by comparing it to another type of violence, in a way, we're kind of colluding with the minor violences.
And I feel for you, because I know that you're going to spend a year now talking about this, and every day you do a talk, you probably have to tell your story.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Is that cathartic in some way? Is it therapeutic in some way, or is it?
I think it's more effective, but like.
Yeah, I know, but yeah. Would you prefer not? You'd obviously prefer not. Would you prefer that you didn't have the story to tell? Obviously.
But, yeah. Oh, obviously. Yeah. I mean, like some days now, it's quite a challenge, and sometimes, you know, sometimes they'll be giving a I'll be giving a talk or a presentation, and I'll touch on it briefly, but won't, you know, explain the whole thing, because sometimes it's just going through that whole thing again, something that I've been talking about for 2 years now. It's quite a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
So I suppose there is that element of, you know, self care and taking care of myself as well as trying to, you know, make a difference.
And is there any hint that time is healing or?
I suppose, you know, with time, things things change, and the way you perceive things change, and the way you react to things change. So I think definitely there's. I mean, I definitely feel differently from how I felt at first or even a year ago. So, I mean, in a year's time, I might feel differently again. So yeah. I suppose there is that element of progress.
My nanny had a saying, house devil and street saint. I never knew what she meant. I am now a woman of age and think she was very wise. Well done to Tom, says Ruth. And why is this campaign just about violence against women? The Men's Network last week reported a 40% increase in calls to their service. Well, this is about... See, what struck me, and I spoke to you at the Vodafone World of Difference judging thing, was that, violence against women is perpetrated by men.
Yeah.
And yet, it seems that in all of the discussions that men are left out of it. So what the White Ribbon Campaign is doing is addressing men.
Yes, yeah.
And it seems stupid that hasn't been done before.
Yes, yeah. And I just wanted to answer that gentleman's question. This is not only about violence against women, it's about men's violence against men, which happens a lot more commonly. And I think that has, you know, a very very similar cause, and those causes are, again, systems of dominance and how we put down other men and how we subordinate women and other men. So I think that this campaign is about violence against men as well as violence against women. We're addressing the same causes.
I think what they were saying is, because that you might have missed that, it was women's violence or abuse of men, psychological and physical.
Right,
yes,
yeah. Again, I would say it comes from the same thing.
Yeah. Ask Tom, would he be against that fella coming over here with his teaching teaching men how to score women? It's Julien Blanc. Are you aware of him?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I would prefer he didn't come near this country, to be honest.
He just to let people know who he is, he's an LA-based who's self-styled pickup artist. He holds seminars teaching men how to pick up women using force and emotional abuse, and he's planning to come here. So I've seen pictures of him hold a woman by the throat.
He
forces women's heads down to his crotch.
And also he teaches other men that this
should
is
he, should he not be imprisoned or like that?
He's on camera committing abuse, so I don't know. I mean, there certainly should be an inquiry into it or something. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, if he's let into this country, I'll be out at Dublin Airport with a number of people stopping him.
Yeah, I'll be there right with you. Right?
Yeah, okay. there's bracelets and there's ribbons, and today is International White Ribbon Day. Of course, with any of these things, it's about the whole year. It's not just about one day, but it's good to get people thinking about it. And you can donate to text White Ribbon to 50300, and the text will cost you €4. I know you have a busy day, Tom. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on Today FM.